volatility on Wall Street is really at an all-time high. Swings of 100, 200 points in a matter of minutes are not unheard of these days. And joining us to talk about the details of what's happened around the world and also on Wall Street is the New York Times international economics correspondent Mark Landler. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
I was talking with one of our colleagues at the Financial Times in London, and he was saying that one of the things that's going on today is the settlement of Lehman Brothers' debts is giving the first inclination of what the real price might be for some of the credit default swaps and some of the strange paper that was on the books at Lehman Brothers, and it's looking to be about 12 to 15 cents on the dollar. Are you getting any indication that this information is starting to come out?
Yeah, we're hearing very much the same thing. I mean, my focus is more on what the policymakers are going to do today, and I think that there's a great deal of also anticipation, which may account for some of the volatility in the market, that we could see some fairly dramatic coordinated action from a meeting of finance ministers here in Washington. But yes, you've got that. Plus, you've got corporate earnings season about to begin, which will show some real world downturn effects on mainstream companies. And frankly, as long as we keep going with the credit crunch, there's the greater and greater likelihood and probability that companies are going to start getting into short-term financing problems. So I think all of these factors are coalescing in a fairly dramatic way this morning.
Well, we've certainly seen GM getting hammered by the credit markets. The LIBOR interest rates seem to be just absolutely stuck. There's no sign that the unfreeze is happening. The G7 is meeting, and these finance ministers are at least projecting that there may possibly be some coordinated action, but what could they do? They've done quite a lot up till now.
Well, one of the points that several people have made to me is that, in fact, they've done the right things. The problem is that the crisis, the magnitude of it, keeps outrunning what they're doing, and they keep finding themselves behind the curve. That's why this morning you see, discussion of whether the U.S. government will simply insure all bank deposits and bank debt. A week ago, when the Irish did something similar, it was portrayed widely around the world as almost outlandish in its scale, and yet now it suddenly looks like maybe it's a realistic, even pragmatic way to respond to what's going on. So I think the question coming out, going into today's G7 meeting, is how ambitious can they be? Can they agree on some of these truly far-reaching programs? And then, frankly, even if they do, given how quickly events are moving, will that finally send a message that puts a bottom under the market? Because nothing they've done so far has managed to do that.
And, Mark, I mean, they essentially don't have a choice, do they? I mean, the market is demanding some kind of dramatic action, and it has essentially rejected everything that's been done individually by the U.S. as well as by the European and in Japan officials, what they've done. It calls for a dramatic intervention. And like John, I mean, what are some of the things specifically that you could imagine that they would talk about, seeing as they've been behind the curve on this entire crisis so far?
Well, one point that a very smart economist made to me a few minutes ago was there was this coordinated intervention by central banks a couple of days ago. They cut rates by 50 basis points. Why not just cut them by 100 basis points? Why not be even more radical? Yes, the price of doing that is that you kick off a bout of inflation, more than likely. But inflation might not be the worst thing to deal with in this environment. So, there's a lot of orthodoxy that needs to be overcome by policymakers in the next couple of days.
Well, in fact, you've got countervailing trends in commodities. I mean, it's a 2.5-year low on copper, and oil is in a freefall plunge. So even if you did have some short-term inflation on the monetary side, you definitely have some relief on the commodity side.
Absolutely. And there's also an argument that a little bit of inflation isn't a bad way to reflate the situation. And in fact, there's a precedent for this in previous countries that have had financial crises. And central bankers in countries in Southeast Asia and other places will tell you that this isn't a bad remedy. So that's one idea. But among the other ideas, a recapitalization of the banking system that would be much more ambitious than what's been talked about so far. The British model is probably the one that's getting the most attention. How much will the U.S. move toward the British model? There's some evidence evidence that they are converging. They'll probably have to converge further. And then there's the whole issue of do you guarantee all interbank lending? That hasn't happened yet, but the Fed is already moving slowly in that direction by guaranteeing commercial paper and things like that. And then lastly, and maybe this is the most expensive of all possible options, do you simply go into the mortgage market the way Senator John McCain suggested a few nights ago during the debate and do something major in terms of buying troubled mortgages? That's the option that's always been viewed as maybe the most expensive of all, but it could put a floor under the housing market, and people are beginning to talk more about that as well.
Well, question for you, Mark. If the heart of the problem is the credit freeze, then why don't they just guarantee those interbank loans?
Well, they may end up doing that. One of Gordon Brown's suggestions in a letter yesterday to the president of France, Sarkozy, was that that's what they're going to do with short and medium-term loans in Britain. And he thinks that if that was done across borders, it would send a very strong message. People have not yet raised that as sort of the next step in the United States. But it might well be, and that could be something that would come out of this weekend's meetings, because you could coordinate that one in some ways perhaps more easily than a recapitalization. The recapitalization issue is complicated in the United States,
right?
Because under the terms of the rescue plan, there's all kinds of restrictions on executive compensation, and the American authorities are worried that if they go that route, banks may view it as a sort of a punitive option and not want to do it because they have to, you know, agree to all sorts of restrictions on pay.
Although it's getting so cold out there, it might be that banks don't want to be outside in the cold, even if it means just a few dollars in their compensation. Mark Landler, I'd love to be a fly on the wall at some of these meetings to hear what the world leaders are calling this financial crisis. Do you have a replacement for Meltdown for us quickly in the last couple seconds?
A replacement for Meltdown. We try to stay away from Meltdown, to tell you the truth.
Well, what do you got? What do you got? Give me a replacement.
I can't give you I can't get Global Panic.
Global
the
Panic.
Best I can come up
That's
with right
good.
Now.
That's not bad at all. Mark Landler, international economics correspondent for the New York Times, joining us from Washington.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.